Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings, or the midnight munchies. Yeah. You know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome. It's time for the Nerdist Podcast number 329. Maybe you're listening to this podcast right now and your girlfriend is next to you, derisively mouthing your words. No? No, oh, she's doing the zip the lip thing. Not gonna talk?
No, because...
You're doing it!
No, you shouldn't.
No, you're talking.
I have had so many people come up to me and be like, I don't care what other people say, I like you on the intros. I don't know what that means, but I'm just not going to talk anymore.
Oh my god, it's the old, don't, I don't care. Everyone says you're a piece of shit, but I think you're pretty great.
I don't know where these are coming from, I don't know.
Sweetie, it's not... Maybe 2 people.
I don't know. Where?
I don't know.
Anyway. It don't matter.
Well, I like you on the
you
intros.
Don't need me on the
hey, intro. I like you. My house, my rules. My house, my rules. I love you on the intros.
Well, 2 people don't, so that overrules 1 person.
No, you know, it's when you're like an insecure performer, 2 people can overrule like 1,000 people.
No,
if the 1,000 people said really nice things.
I know how it works.
Good. This was a really nice moment.
Yeah.
What would you do if I sang out of
tune?
Are
you allowed to do that on here?
I just fucking did it. My house, my rules. I'm going to be doing stand-up around the country as soon as Talking Dead wraps and... So March 30th, Doctor Who premieres on BBC America, and then the Nerdist TV show is on 10 o'clock that night. Then Sunday the 31st is the season finale of Walking Dead and Talking Dead. And then I go on the road. I'm going to New York, to Caroline's in April, and then going to Madison, Wisconsin, and Denver, and Portland, and Baltimore, and D.C. Go to Nerdist.com/calendar for ticket links to all those. I'd like to thank, as a sponsor to this episode of Nerdist Podcast, Audible. Audible.com. If you've listened to an audiobook, you probably got it from Audible. And you can go to audible.com/nerdist to get a free audiobook download right now. 100,000 titles to choose from. Every genre. Audible's got it covered. I don't know why I said that twice. No, I don't. Stop mouthing the words! There's a new book that came that's being republished, All the Rave, The Rise and Fall of Sean Fanning's Napster. It's a really kind of an inside account of the file sharing revolution and its effect on the music industry. And it was it's the 10th anniversary release. It was out of print. Now you can get it as an audiobook with a special interview with the author, Joseph Menn. So maybe check that out as a free audiobook download by going to audible.com/nerdist. Thank you so much to Audible for sponsoring this episode of the podcast, which is Rich Moore. I was so excited to meet Rich Moore when I moderated the Disney panel at Comic-Con last year in San Diego because, you know, Rich was a Simpsons guy and then directed Wreck-It Ralph, and I was so excited that Wreck-It Ralph turned out to be the movie that I hoped it would be. And Rich is a really sweet, super funny guy, really cool. So there's a lot of great first couple of seasons of Simpsons stories on here, in addition to some good Wreck-It Ralph stuff, and then just general horsing around with words, not in a physical sense. We're not that way. You've heard this podcast. Why are you smiling at me over there, Clodard? What is it?
Look, I don't care what other people say. I think you're pretty cute.
Jonathan Subs! you totally have a crush on me.
I mean,
maybe. Oh!
I don't know.
Really? Yeah. All right, I'm going to turn this off and then...
What are you going to do?
I'm on a record!
What?
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for laughing at my own stupid joke. Speaking of Wreck-It Ralph, I'd like to point out that the Wreck-It Ralph Blu-ray comes out March 5th, and I'm on it. If you pause it, my mug pops up. So if you hate my guts, don't pause Wreck-It Ralph. What? Yes, people should watch it. Why wouldn't I?
I'm just saying I'm gonna wreck it.
That's what Ralph says.
Alright, fine, I'll leave you to it then.
Alright, Rich Moore, Nerdist Podcast. # I'm gonna wreck it.
Your segues are so stupid.
What are you, the internet?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Rich Moore, it's so exciting to see you. Man, I love... Let's just talk, first of all, about how I saw the Wreck-It Ralph preview at E3 last year.
Yes.
And instantly it was like, oh, fuck, get out of my brain. Because it was like, that was, I mean, everything that I would ever want in a movie. And then I got to moderate your panel at Comic-Con.
That was so fun.
And
that was great.
Further excited by the footage that I saw.
Just mentioned two places where I was too busy to see any of those things.
I'm so sorry. So hard.
Have you heard of E3 in comic?
Oh, I was all over that shit.
Had I not been able to moderate that panel, I never would have gotten into Hall H because it's really hard to get in there.
There's like a year waiting list, I think.
And then people camping.
Mm-hmm.
And not a few people, like a lot of people camping overnight.
I was in that hotel that overlooked Hall H, whatever the hell that is, the Bayside. What is that?
Yeah, I think it is the Hilton Bay front. The Hilton Bay front.
Yeah, I was like on
gorgeous.
I was on like the 14th floor, and I would get up from, because my call would be like 8 a.m. and I'd get up and I'd look outside and the line would be going to that little island.
Yep.
Today's geek and today's nerd, you know, you got to work at it.
What about tomorrow's nerd? Let's get on that.
Tomorrow's nerd? I can't even.
Google Glasses, everybody.
Oh, that's going to be so
yay!
Cool.
Yay! Another thing
to
carry around.
That's so cool.
It'll be great.
It'll be awesome.
Can I look at you and then Wreck-It Ralph starts playing? Is that how Google Glasses work?
I'm hoping. You know, that it kind of recognizes things and little pieces
of animation. I have a theory that what you can start doing is hacking the Google Glasses.
That's a good idea.
And then just start throwing like chat roulette, surprise, spontaneous dicks in people's field of vision. Where they're just walking and like talking to their grandma. Oh my God! And then you're gonna
grandma. You have a penis.
Yes.
You no longer.
Honey, you knew that.
You no longer have to imagine someone else when you're having sex with your girlfriend, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it works.
I'm sure that.
I'm wearing glasses during sex.
That's so I can see.
The idea that
it's a handicap.
I'm myopic.
I think the fun new thing will be reaction videos of people getting horrible images thrown into their Google Glasses.
I like that.
And just like seeing them go, jeez, and then like having to whip off the...
We gotta start working on
it. I'm into it.
It's millions of dollars we're sitting on right now.
That's
that
like
we're
great not, idea.
Probably dozens
you know
of dollars.
I had $1 million idea in Japan. When we were there promoting the movie.
What about the $1 million idea called Wreck-It Ralph?
No. This is bigger, guys.
Okay,
This is bigger. Everyone there... if they're sick or they don't want to get sick, they walk around with those surgical masks.
On. Yeah.
You know, but they're all just white surgical masks. You know, it looks It's like grandma's surgical mask.
Right? Who wants that?
Like, where's the designer surgical mask for the person who's sick?
Where's the one that has the weeping angel teeth
one,
on it?
Like Bane, you know? Yeah. It's like, where's that?
I was thinking nice. Louis Vuitton or Gucci, but we could do that. Yeah.
Ohio Gazimus Batman.
Near me.
Ohio Gazimus Batman son.
I don't want to get whatever you are.
I'm glad everyone has a Bane. That makes me happy.
I know. Mine's horrible.
No, yeah, everyone's.
It's become the new Michael Caine.
It kind of is.
And they rhyme. Bane.
Bane and Caine.
I mean, and they're both in the same movie. So
Michael Bane.
Well,
good night, you sons of. I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to sit around Michael here Bane. And watch another Wayne die.
Blame it on Rio.
I don't understand what you're saying.
He was
I'm Michael Caine. Your name's Bane. I gotta go.
He's freestyling right now.
It is. You should abstain. It rhymes!
I'm good with it.
That's pretty good.
Let's just make a haiku.
I loved Wreck-It Ralph so much. Oh, sure. Yeah, we're back on that. Someone's gonna do it. Someone's gonna do it.
Guys,
someone's gonna do it.
Wait, you're just giving your idea away right now?
No, I'm pleading to whoever makes surgical masks out there to get a hold of them.
Hey, they seem like a fun group.
Yeah. The manufacturers of surgical masks.
The greatest
masks.
Thing with surgical masks I ever saw was when Peter Sarsgaard hosted SNL, and he did the commercial for the Peter Sarsgaard Sarsgaard, which was a Peter Sarsgaard-endorsed surgical mask.
So I would put that up there with John Hamm's John Hamm.
Yeah, Hamm and Bubbly.
Yeah.
With the Hamm and Buble.
Oh, that's really fucking funny.
We love puns, guys.
We have fun here.
You've worked on...
How hard do you have to fight to get Beard Papa in the movie?
You know what? It wasn't that hard.
I was so excited when I saw it.
People and they said, yes, absolutely. You want to use Beard Papa in a Disney film? How much do we have to pay you?
It's fantastic.
Do you want cream puffs?
Yes. I had just, I think it was maybe a week before I saw the first trailer for the teaser for Wreck-It Ralph, where I was talking to someone about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which holds up. The movie totally holds up. Yeah. And I was saying, and the shitty thing is, that will never happen again because no one will ever allow all of their IP to be crunched up under one umbrella. And then a week later, I was like, oh, my God, of course, video games, of course. Why? Oh, my God, of course. It was such a
never
lovely.
Never.
Yeah, you know? You're right. Never. Yeah, it was such a lovely moment. And I got to be on the DVD, on the Blu-ray.
That's right.
When you pause the Blu-ray for too long, your punishment is that I come on and start yelling at you. What are you doing? No,
well, I wanted to put that in the feature. I wanted that in the cinemas.
You know, and they wouldn't let it.
So what you're telling me
so when you're
is
when
should...
you pause the movie in the theater.
In the theater, just know at various times during the movie, I wanted you to walk out and just start yelling at the audience.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
so what you're telling me is I should buy the DVD, not the Blu-ray.
You should buy the... Oh.
No,
I get your joke.
I don't need you yelling at me.
I get your joke.
I don't need you yelling at me at home, too.
I'm not yelling that.
You shut your fucking mouth. There's guests here.
It's me coming out and basically stop crying. Why are you crying? That's the funniest thing. When you see parents with kids at amusement parks, they're like, why are you crying? And they're shaking them. Well, because you're shaking your child. I get that it's not fun to stand in lines.
May I just step in and play mediator?
But I get to, but basically I come on and I point out a lot of the references, like all of the video game references in the movie, which was such an honor for me that I got to do that.
You're kind of like that masked magician guy that shows how all the tricks
oh
are
my
done.
God. That's right. If Mitch Pileggi narrated your coming on the screen, I would be into it. He's who narrated the magician show.
Yeah.
Mitch Pileggi of X-Files
fame.
All right.
Skinner himself.
Whatever happened to him?
I think he's living comfortably in a theater group somewhere.
Maybe.
That's just my guess.
Maybe we should have him on and find out what he's up to.
Mitch, if you're out there, or if anybody knows Mitch Pileggi.
And if you manufacture surgical masks.
Yes, Bob.
You know.
No,
that'd be great.
Actually, he started a company called Mitch Pileggings, where he just makes decorative.
Oh my God, and they're all his face.
They're all his face. the kids love.
Scully Mulder.
Yeah.
But he's on.
Is it like the one all have skulls on it for Scully, and the other ones are all moldy.
Moldy.
Yeah. There was an X-Files video game for the PC that I used to play all the time, which was it used real video footage, and you could manipulate sort of like, you know, decide to like pick up something or whatever, and you could always, or you would be called into Skinner's office, and there'd be a video of Skinner playing, and you could just take your gun out and shoot Skinner in the in the face if you wanted to. You know, they wouldn't animate that wouldn't be shown on the video or whatever, but then the next cut scene is always him going, I need your badge and your gun.
Oh, so yeah, he's got to basically...
No, he's totally fine, but he does have to...
Yeah, he has to take away your badge and your gun. You're not supposed to shoot Skinner. You shouldn't shoot Skinner in the face. How much of...
You're just supposed to not believe, Bert.
I just want to believe.
Well, the truth is out there, you guys.
Uh-huh.
The truth is out there. Did you... Were you a sci-fi... Are you a sci-fi guy at all?
Oh, yeah. Back when it wasn't in fashion
or cool, or good,
or yeah, you know, for
we did have good sci-fi, just not all of it was great.
No. I mean, when it wasn't good to be that kind of fan.
Yeah.
You know, for the younger geeks and nerds, there was a day when troglodytes ruled this planet, and if you wore a shirt like this, you know,
oh yeah.
You would get beat up,
sure.
You know, and dragged by a truck, you know.
Well, that's a little harsh, but...
Well, you didn't come from Oxnard, California, my friend. So you didn't really talk about a love for... I started with Lost in Space, mm-hmm. I think, when I was about reruns of Lost in Space. And then that was my gateway sci-fi TV show.
I loved the theme song to
that.
Oh,
yeah.
Ridiculous bucket of boats.
Oh, the pain. Oh, the pain.
The great Jonathan Harris. And from there, it went to Star Trek, the original Star Trek.
Right, of course,
And then...
Oh, the Ferengi! Oh, the Ferengi!
No, the Ferengi were not introduced until Mission at Farpoint and Star Trek Next Generation, 1986.
All right.
And then Star Wars, you know, and then...
Oh, the Force!
Yeah.
Oh, the Force! You're just putting and Jonathan just Harris in everything.
Yeah, you know, if Jonathan Harris was in Star Wars, I...
That would have been so amazing. Sci-fi.
Oh, he would have been a great C-3PO.
I think he would have been a great...
Yes, he would have been a perfect C-3PO.
Oh,
that's really great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How rude! Or he would have been a good emperor, too.
Yeah. Oh, you want this... Oh, the pain.
I can feel your hate surging. Surging.
Do we see the Emperor in the...
You in see Star him Wars? In you see yeah. him in like holograph
in a,
like yeah, in a, like in a hologram yeah, like the holographic in his
yeah,
he but he's
had,
not
like, monkey eyes.
He's not he's not this no. guy just
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, and
he's
also
just, he's he sounded like he just had a stroke or something, because good.
Yeah.
He would be a great asset.
And also, Darth Vader in the original Star Wars is kind of a psycho. Like, he doesn't really kind of get cool and calm and collected until the next movie.
Kind of... that guy that murders everybody is kind of a psycho?
I mean, but he's aggressive. Like, he's in the follow-up movies, he's not like... I want kid, you know, like he's kind of aggressive in the first movies,
well,
whereas he's
real
more
fast a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I think once he realizes his son and daughter, but once his son and daughter are out there, he's gonna calm down. If he wants custody of them again, he's probably gonna just calm down a little bit.
He gets custody. The worst deadbeat dad in the universe. Yeah.
Where were you?
I murdered younglings.
You couldn't go in the backyard and force throw the ball around with me.
You don't know what it's like to be me. How do you think you get that food you're eating, that blue gruel?
it's the gross, like, blue-looking milk that he's drinking. Yeah. That's why I always thought they had a problem with him at Mos Eisley. It's because he ordered milk at the bar.
Can I have some blue milk?
I don't like your kind around here. I don't like you either.
And what... And what are droids going to do in a bar that's so bad that they can't, get them out of here?
But they're probably just really...
Robots?
It really wasn't that they were robots. It was just that he was really effeminate. It's brutal. Mos Eisley.
We're just, we poked a lot of holes in this today.
Yeah. It just doesn't stand up.
You hear that? You hear that, Disney?
Mm-hmm. You
just wasted $4 billion.
You just bought a turkey.
I gotta say, we just watched episode 4 again the other, like, not that long ago, a few months ago.
Yeah.
And it's so gorgeous. Like, those shots of Tatooine with the suns and the, oh, fuck. Still.
That's the one, that's the one that just absolutely... It just got its hooks in me, and I, for years, just kind of, you know.
Have you been to the ranch? Have you seen the...
Yes.
Did they take you into the archives with all of the...
No, we didn't go in the archives. We did our sound mix up there with Gary Rydstrom, and I met Ben Burt up there, and who did all the sound for the Star Wars movies. And it's like holy ground or something. It's just so weird. You're walking around and you go into the big main house, and there's a bureau, and there's like no one around. You know, you can just kind of walk around, and in this bureau, oh, there's Indiana Jones's hat. You know. And that's the idol. And here's one of the original snowspeeder models. And Darth Vader's lightsaber. And it's weird. And it's just kind of sitting there, you know? And there's, like, no one around. But, you know, if you touch it, you know, that there's going to be 50 guys.
They all come out of the walls.
Yeah.
Or there's some little security droid that comes out. But,
man, it's gorgeous and just kind of, wow. So this is where
they did all the matte paintings in this one building where they have like everything, you know, like original droids, like Ark of the Covenant, an original concept pieces for Jabba and
Howard the Duck.
And Carbonite. No, there was Howard the Duck was not there.
Willow. Matt Mardigan.
Matt Mardigan. They also have this line, like you would see in a hardware store, of shower doors just slid into these slots.
Yeah. Oh.
Because the shower doors were the aspect ratio, so they used them for matte painting. So they just bought fucking shower doors.
Right, and painted on that.
And so then, you know, they slide them out and show you, and it's a shower door, but it's like, oh, that's the scene when they're in the hangar. And then all of the stormtroopers and holy shit. And then, like, the Millennium Falcon. And when you look at it, it's a gorgeous painting, but it looks flat. And when you take a picture of it,
it has all.
It just boom, like yeah. it looks like it's a real thing.
Amazing! I love those old paintings.
Shower
Disney,
doors.
Yeah, Disney has an archives that when I started at the studio, they like to take all the new hires over to kind of we can check out the archives, show you where we keep all the.
Oh my God! Thank you for inviting us. We would love to go
you
with
guys
you. Guys
come over.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Thanks. Right after, so I'm pretty free.
We could go.
So you go in and they're like, okay, well, we have a lot of old, you know, the old drawings and background paintings and stuff. And they're like, we'd like to start by showing you this. And they pull out an animation folder and with animation paper in there. And they're like, they don't touch it. They're using like these little sticks
to kind of,
you know, go through the pages. And it's the original rough animation from Steamboat Willie.
Jesus Christ.
You know? It's like, oh my God, you know, this... I'm looking at the drawings, you know, from
Hachu disintegrates. Yeah,
and it feels like what is this worth? You know, what if I vomited on
there's
this?
No,
right now?
There's I don't even know if there's
even
a price
put a value on this. This is and it's in a warehouse in Glendale, you know.
Don't tell them.
Yeah.
Glendale, Arizona.
Let me give you Glendale, Arizona. Nice. The address is fake address.
I think what we should do
is fake address. You know, master of improv.
They should prank the Storage Wars people and just put up a storage facade on these archives.
Oh my God.
And just let them bid like $1,500. It's like, this is. Jesus Christ.
No, we're just joking.
Yeah.
We're just joking, yup guy.
Yup guy.
Our bananas are here.
Yay!
The man is here with our bananas.
There's so many things that I want to talk to you about. A lot of the, you know, the process of Wreck-It Ralph.
Thank you.
How you were able to pitch it, how long the process took. But let's go back to the fact that you, my friend, were a Simpsons animator.
I was.
Who were you? I had
guilty.
Did you know do you know my friend Brad Abelson? Did you know Brad?
Yes, I do know Brad.
Yeah.
He kind of came after my time, but We all, you know, kind of know each other.
What was your time at Simpsons?
I was there season 1 through 5.
And good for you.
Like 89 through 93.
So what was the process of altering the Simpsons between the first and
the
third?
Tracy Ullman show?
I mean, obviously the Tracy Ullman was super, super rough. But I mean the animation, like the character design changed between like the first, second, and third season, and Homer went from being Frosty Chocolate Milkshakes guy to going to more, you know, like to more of what we think of him now.
Well, I think that he began the voice Dan Castellaneta was doing something that was more kind of, it was kind of a Walter Matthau, you know?
Yeah.
Impersonation.
Want to get you, Felix?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember some of those shorts. Good night, boy. You know, it had that really kind of, you know, it was a more just kind of nurturing and kind voice, you
yeah.
know? And but he couldn't, they found very quickly that Homer needed to get loud, you know,
yeah.
and scream a lot. And that voice wasn't just conducive to that. So he tried different things, and it just kind of like with the drawing style of it, too. We were always evolving the characters because more and more people had to draw them. You know, our crew kept expanding, so we'd have to build these packs of model sheets to, you know, that have various angles on the characters and turnarounds of the characters. And that began to kind of solidify them into how they look.
Because you stopped, after the first few seasons, you stopped ever seeing the characters dead on, face on.
Yeah, we stopped doing that because we felt, well, it just flattened them out, you know, and they just didn't look as appealing as they did when they were at a slight 3/4 or 7/8 view, you know. So, but we did do a lot of flat on. I think those were kind of funny, you know. I remember doing a show where, yeah, we just cut to Homer's face flat on with this vacant expression, and it played really great, I think. But, you know, I don't agree with everything, you know, but...
was the decision to make them yellow really so people would think they needed to adjust their TV set?
No, I think that... Well, I don't know. The story that I heard was there was a color stylist named Georgie Palouse that was in charge of painting all the cells and all the backgrounds on the show when they were doing the Tracy Ullman mm-hmm. shorts. And Georgie loved like these kind of bright colors, and she kind of invented that color palette for the show. And she just thought, well, painting them flesh would be boring, so, you know, I'm just going to paint them yellow and see what they said, and I guess it stuck, you know, so... That's the story I heard.
The wives' tale is like, oh, yeah. They did it so people would think they had to adjust the color on their
set. Well, what was funny is in that first season, we used to go through, there used to be a step in the process called telecine, you know, where you would send the print to this place that would balance the color for television. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like the step between film and video. And they didn't know that the characters were supposed to be yellow, so they would try to adjust it back to kind of a flesh color. And that's why in that first season, there's the yellow color kind of fluctuates a lot, you know.
Oh, wow.
Bright yellow to kind of.
Oh, my God. I totally know what you're talking about.
So if you go back to the first season and someone had to say, like, go to the telecine guy and say, no, they're supposed to be yellow. Stop trying to.
But only after the first entire season. Wait, I feel like maybe we should talk to this guy.
Yeah, what is happening between, you know, film and broadcast? And it turned out that this guy was trying to, you know, I don't know what's wrong with those painters overseas. They keep doing this really yellow looking flesh color. So,
oh, man, I took the I couldn't major in animation. I went to UCLA. I couldn't major in animation there because you have to be in the film program to do that. Right. But I took the animation. I took the yeah. courses. Mm-hmm. And there was a professor there, and this guy named Dan McLaughlin.
Yeah.
Did you know Dan?
Well, I know a lot of people who went to UCLA, and they talk about him.
Dan, and he kind of had this sort of voice. And
yeah.
But he was such a sweet guy that we'd, of course, behind his back, we were like, and then, of course, we had to find a place to bury the bodies, but, you know, where are you going to find a shovel at 3 a.m.? And
are you sure it wasn't Doc Brown that was
That's exactly how he sounded, though. But Dan McLaughlin animated he was responsible for all those old Sesame Street shorts where it was like you'd see the three kids with the fruit vendor and then like one would get an orange and one would get an apple.
You just find me the guy that did the pinball machine for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
11, 12. And the Pointer Sisters.
He's lost him.
Oh. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
But Dan was a sweet guy, and so this was, of course, back in the days when people actually would have an animation table and draw and cells and have to paint things, and you'd got to go
paper.
Yeah,
and that's how The Simpsons were done. I mean, The Simpsons were done with the exact same technology that they did Snow White. You know, so really, just as a matter of process, nothing changed very much from, you know, the first.
I think The Simpsons looks too slick now. I think you need a little element of a little shittiness in there. I think
they resisted going digital for years. You know, for that reason, because whenever they would do tests with the new technology, Matt would say, "God, it looks too slick," like you're saying, and it looks digital, looks electronic, and it lost kind of the homemade quality, you know, of the show. And they did all kinds of things. They tried to put like film grain over the whole thing. They tried to hit the shitty button, you know, put the shitty filter on. There's something about the old episodes, you know, not just because I've worked on them, but there's just something tactile and just rough about it that I really love, you know. And we were painting on cells at that time too. I mean, it was
great. I will take one.
Okay, he just carries them around.
Well, I mean, I just assume once. Yeah. Oh my God, he does carry them around.
Now, so when you're doing a full CG movie,
yeah,
is there any part of you, the animation nerd, that's a little broken hearted? It's like, oh, I mean, we could print out a scene from it, but it's not. But we don't have cells.
Well, and that's not like a functional piece of the process, you know?
Right?
You're just kind of making something that's collectible,
right?
Know? It's like when Disney would put out the limited edition Cinderella cell, you know, and it was just made for,
yeah,
you know, for collectors. It wasn't an actual, you know, frame from the movie. And that's what I always loved about cells. You know, it's like this, you know, is one of many that made the scene, you know, that made it work. It's not just like a piece of art that someone manufactured to sell as a collectible.
I have a couple of fun cells. I have a Ren and Stimpy cell.
Yeah.
And then I have a Wizard's cell. That I bought from Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah,
and he
off
signed
the street
it.
Corner. that was the first job I had out of college.
You worked on Wizards?
No, not on Wizards. Oh. No. That was kind of at Ralph's pinnacle. I caught him on the way down. A bunch of us caught him when he was doing the Mighty Mouse Saturday morning show.
Oh, with John Kay.
Yeah, with John.
Yeah.
So for a lot of us, myself, Andrew Stanton,
sure,
Jim Reardon, Bruce Timm, you know, that,
oh, wow,
that a lot of Vicky Jensen, who was a director on Shrek, just a lot of great people were there on that show. And it was for myself and Jim Reardon and Andrew Stanton. It was our first job out of Cal Arts, and Ralph hired us as writers for some reason. We were writing Saturday morning cartoons.
Wreck-It Ralph Bakshi.
Oh my God! I mean, it was the best first job for a young animator right off.
Yeah, that
college
show was so like the original Mighty Mouse, because we had John Kay on the podcast too,
yeah,
and it was just like there. It just sort of crept through, and he said, like, we all showed up, and all of a sudden it was like, we have to make a show,
right,
and we don't really have a lot of time, and all the animators have to write it because there's, you know.
It was so strange. I mean, it was a really, I don't know how any work got done. You know, it was just like going to work and messing around, just kind of fucking around, and, you know, and, oh, I guess I better do some drawings and stuff, and somehow these shows were getting done, and somehow they were getting past the censor. And I mean, there wasn't really objectionable things to them. They were just weird.
Yeah.
You know, they were just very kind of surreal and obtuse. And what's the censor going to say? We can't put that on. That's too obtuse.
Right.
Yeah. That's too absurd.
It just falls outside the.
Yeah. So, but it was great. And Ralph was actually the first guy to give me a chance at directing, you know, so I credit or blame the great Ralph Bakshi for hoisting me upon the planet.
There's no way when you're working on Simpsons season one, you're like, this is going to go for 25 seasons.
No, you know, but I do remember thinking, and it was, that was a weird time back then, because it was pretty bleak for animation. Like, this was like 89, you know, and coming out of college, you couldn't really go to Disney. Had not kind of, you know, taken that step forward with the Little Mermaid and all that. That was all kind of in the works.
And television animation was a mess.
It was Filmation, which had just gone out of business, you know, and Deke, D-I-C.
Yeah, yeah, that did Inspector Gadget.
Inspector Gadget and lots of shows based on toys and, you know. So there wasn't really much out there, you know. So to land a job with someone like Bakshi, you know, who really tried, and he was pitching shows like crazy to networks, and that's where we really got to have a lot of fun, you know, working on these wild projects with him. There just wasn't, it was kind of a wasteland at that time. So when The Simpsons came around, there were very few people on the staff that really kind of understood what Matt and Jim Brooks and Sam Simon were really trying to do with the show, you know. And you had a lot of people working on it on the animation end who had worked on stuff like Scooby-Doo, you know, and
right.
just all those Hanna-Barbera cartoons in the 70s. And they just didn't really, they didn't understand it. Not trying to be mean, you know, but they just didn't understand what the sense of humor was, you know. And there was maybe about 10 of us on the staff, you know, that kind of got what it was, you know. And we would read the scripts and say, you know, I would say to myself, like, my God, this is gold. You know, this is everything I've ever wanted to do, you know, in animation. And if I don't, you know, give it my all, I don't think I'll be able to live with myself. And if this doesn't get off the ground and have a chance, I can't live with myself in the future, you know. So, I mean, I just absolutely poured my heart and soul into that show. And the first season was just, I cannot remember anything else going on in the world except Simpsons. Like, there's a whole area of my life for about 3 or 4 years that, who was the president or what? And people will bring up current events from that time. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking. I was on The Simpsons then.
It's
was,
such an incredible, like a good, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if people really understand, but a really good cartoon requires, there's a little bit of luck that at every point that every artist who, it's like, yeah. you have to have amazing music, you have to have amazing performances, you have to have amazing art, you have to have amazing direction,
mm-hmm.
you have to have amazing story. Like, there's so many different places where it can sag, and when it works.
And when it works, it's great, but The Simpsons had kind of it had kind of a rocky beginning, the series, because there were people working on the show on the animation end who did not understand what we were trying to do. And Fox almost, when we screened the very first episode to the network, they almost pulled the plug.
Oh,
on the whole
Jesus.
Thing, because it was nothing like The Simpsons like you know it now. They said, what is this? You know, this is just like a Saturday morning cartoon, you know. And Jim, if not for Jim Brooks saying to, I'm trying to remember who, Barry Diller, who was in charge of the studio there at that time, he said, no, we'll get it. We'll, you know, we've got good people on it right now. We'll get the humor. If not for Jim, like, saying, please, you know, give us another chance, there would be no Simpsons. I mean, there was a moment where it looked like, you know, this was not going to happen, and that what they wanted to do couldn't be done, you know. But then luckily, as shows started to come back, you know, that were directed by the people, you know, who've been with the show now for years, they realized, okay, we can do this. This is possible.
Oh, my God. That's yeah. just like even thinking about a world without The Simpsons and what happens to comedy and Conan and like
right?
all those like, and just all of the, like, just the ripple effect that had across comedy and a bunch of young people and their comedy development. And,
oh my God.
And I mean, everything that came
things
after.
Would be so different.
There's
so.
A, who was, when you were growing up, who was your, you know, who were your sort, who were your animation heroes?
My animation heroes? Well, I loved the Looney Tunes cartoons. I loved Chuck Jones
yeah.
and, Tex Avery, Bob Clampett, you know, those were the ones that I,
did you
those
like
were
it?
The
did you,
names that I knew.
I talked to John Kay about this, but I was like, I didn't really like the Robert McKimson years.
Yeah,
and then he was like,
were,
no, they were gray.
Well, I mean, I like them, you know, but it's just another style with the characters. Like, I like all those directors of that time. I like Friz Freleng. I like, you know, I like Friz as much as I like Bob Clampett, you know.
But
I
Chuck had this way of, I mean, like, he, to have the talent that he had as an artist, but also the comedy brain that he
right.
had as well. But just those, like, you know, like when you see, like, Bugs Bunny, like, you know, in The Tortoise and the Hare, and he
yeah.
and he rubs the tortoise's head, and it looks like there's a skull underneath
yeah.
the...
No, those animators were amazing. You know, they had a crew, the Warner animators, and the amount of footage that they had to crank out, you know, a week, those guys were as good, I think, as like the Disney's Nine Old Men.
How many drawings per second was it? Was it like 20?
Well, it's film is 24 frames.
24 frames per second. Yeah.
That's on ones.
Right.
You know? So on twos, that's exposing each drawing for
twice.
Two frames.
Yeah.
It would be 12 frames, you know, a second.
But the cheaper animation, like in the Hanna-Barbera years later, it was like...
That stuff was on fours, on sixes.
Right.
On, you know, and there's lots of holds, you know, where the character would just hold and all they're animating is the mouth and maybe put a blink on the eyes.
Walk behind a bush.
Yeah.
No. The bush goes in front of them.
Yeah, the bush over on pay bars.
There are so many... there's a show in town and it's a cartoon dump.
Jerry Beck's.
Yeah. Where they show like, you know, then they show like the worst animation.
Right.
But I remember the worst, the most poorly animated thing that even as a kid I was like, oh, fucking come on. Was the Mighty Hercules. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
When it was like with pant. Yeah. And then it was always walking behind a bush. And it was that very jolty arm where it's like they didn't even bother trying to fill in kids are dumb. They don't give a shit. Yeah.
Well, I remember thinking, I got really excited when I was a kid because Filmation did an animated Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The original cast and everything. I'm like, oh, cool, you know, Star Trek, new Star Trek. And just the fact that you could just recognize the same shots over and over again, you could kind of predict, like, now they're going to cut to this. Now it's going to be the close-up of Scotty. Now it's going to, I was disappointed, Filmation.
do you remember Gilligan's Island in space?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's kind of a genius idea. And I think was way ahead of its time in terms of like that totally feels like a YouTube mashup that someone would make. Yeah. But just putting them in space on a weird planet with a weird little alien.
And even in space, all the skipper wanted was just a big, thick, juicy steak.
That's all he wanted. You know, he could never get it.
That was his want. You know, as a character.
But his lot in life was to have to deal with... I was just trying to figure out...
His need was to reconcile with Gilligan, his little buddy. But his want was a stake.
And Gilligan's, you know, was to make peace with his father figure the skipper. Mm. And I could never understand why they called it Gilligan's Island, because...
Yeah. He didn't own it.
He didn't own it, and I didn't really feel like so much hinged on him. I mean, he was sort of the fuck-up character, but...
Yeah. If anything, it was kind of the professor's island. You
sort
know?
Of.
It really was when you think about it.
I think just Gilligan sounded funny.
He was tagging Marianne. We know that, right?
Well, there was probably all sorts of.
Are you going for a gun?
No,
that,
I just don't. I just. I've never opened this before, and this. I found a.
We got some Fusion Hydrogel.
Oh, nice!
The great Gillette company.
Batteries. Batteries are still.
There's toiletries here.
Why is
in
that?
The studio. I don't know.
Matt, come on. Save it for private. Oh, that was just a razor.
For huffing.
For huffing.
Oh, that's what. It's someone's huffing material.
Yeah, if you want to huff and shave. If you want to have a huff and shave.
Yeah, and here's the bag.
Yep, that's a huffing bag.
We mix them all up in this bag and just.
A lot of the hipsters are doing it now where you huff and then it's like you shave in a weird way that's a big fucking wallet.
Like
it says your feed bag.
My designer surgical mask.
It's a Sony feed bag.
Whose stuff is this?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
I guess it's ours.
Such a rush.
From just the smell of the bag.
Residue,
yeah.
Just from the residue in this bag.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Are you okay?
Keyboard cleaner?
Do you think Michael Yeoh knows that?
Oh my God, that's Michael. Picture of Michael Yeoh and someone in this. Does Michael just not pick up all of his
Look
stuff?
At this and like a makeup thing.
Cinema Secrets. Mm-hmm. No, you have to take it out of the bag, Rich.
From Cinema. Oh.
Yeah. The powder puff works better when you take it out of the bag.
Get out of the bag.
Yeah, there's who's that with Michael Yeoh?
Michael Yeoh and the guy from Borat.
Oh, from back here, it looked like Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah, it's what's his name?
Oh my God, I've just stumbled on a treasure trove.
Oh, look at that! It's the Kardashians.
You got the Kardashians?
Oh Jesus Christ! guys, we are playing Storage Wars right now.
Oh my God! Yeah. Yep.
We got Arquette. Yep. We got one of the Arquettes.
Well, I told Brandon that we really gotta get this storage compartment.
There better be some pictures of Michael Yeoh in there with the Kardashians,
Brandon,
or I'm gonna murder
out.
That son of a bitch.
Oh, here we go. We got an Arquette, a picture of David Arquette.
That's
right
a $50
here.
Bill right there.
Oh,
God,
yeah,
we got...
Okay, we can get $100 for this
I'm definitely making back the $750 I paid for this box.
gets real sad when I don't know who the fuck these people are.
I don't even know who the celebrities are.
That happens a lot in this building. I don't know who that is.
Guy in a kind of a chamois jacket. Ooh.
What's that?
We're finding all kinds of stuff in here.
Is that a coax to RCA?
It's an RCA. Yeah, it's an RCA. No, it's an RCA to XLR with an XLR to quarter inch adapter on.
Okay. Someone went to Radio Shack.
and
a cookie that's a decade old.
Tupperware.
Nope, that's a
container.
Makeup. That's makeup.
Oh, that's an old makeup wipe. Mm-hmm. You never know when you're going to need this again.
Simply sailing.
Nothing fancy, just simply sailing.
The point is, Michael, yo, you have a bunch of shit at this studio that you need to come pick up, and your old makeup cup.
It's Tupperware. Michael on it.
We are not a storage facility. You know, this is a studio. You can't just
this
leave
is a
your
workplace
crap here.
Seriously,
all right? You know.
And your shaving implements.
I'd hate to see his garage. I bet.
It's probably clean because all of his shit's here.
That's true.
Hang on.
Wait, what folder did you find?
Tax returns? Well, here's his porn.
And a diary.
Who prints out their internet porn?
Well,
I was like 10, 12.
How else can you pleasure yourself to ASCII boobs? You have to print that.
That's why they invented the
Perez Hilton
iPad.
Pictures. Right. So funny to me.
Who is? Oh, that's Perez.
That's fat Perez Hilton back when he was fat.
No, he was, thin challenged.
I can say it. That's really funny how many pictures
has
of people.
Has this been here for the whole time?
I don't know.
Michael's not been in this building for a while.
We just found. This is the mother load right here.
You guys.
Oh, my God.
This would be worth like $70 on eBay.
This is going on that eBay thing.
This is a locker that I feel like
the electronic bay.
Jared and Brandy would have found.
And Matt hit the whole line with $50 in the black.
Well,
what else?
Let's talk about Wreck-It Ralph for a minute.
I want to talk about Wreck-It Ralph.
Thank you for the nice award.
Oh, yes.
By the way.
Well, you deserve it.
Let me ask you this. What is this award you keep speaking of? Are you giving out awards I don't know about?
Yeah, we gave film awards. We gave out film awards. Yeah.
You voted, right?
I don't. Let me just.
It wasn't a televised award. It was just.
Let me just back up here.
We just gave them away on the site and in the newsletter. We just picked movies.
Oh, in the newsletter. Okay.
And the website. Yeah, on the website.
I don't subscribe.
You should check it out.
I mean, so.
It's Nerdist.com, man.
What's the award we gave him?
For Wreck-It Ralph. We gave him
best,
a movie award
best
for Wreck-It
Ralph.
Good movie.
The best picture of the year?
In my opinion. Is Wreck-It Ralph nominated?
Listen, I'm just saying. I mean, we should have a subcategory.
Don't you feel like we should consult you?
We should have maybe
for
had
a site you don't even go on that pays you?
I go on the site.
Oh.
To see if there's
a
check coming.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying. I can support. I can support the idea of giving Wreck-It Ralph the best picture of the year. I just feel like we're maybe ignored Skyfall.
That's his problem right now.
I feel like maybe just was like, oh, forget about Skyfall.
Let's
go with best movie that isn't Skyfall. Wreck-It Ralph. Yay!
To be fair, Matt Myra wants to be James Bond's underwear.
James Bond's fat cousin. Jamie Bond works too.
Hey, James!
James, are you coming to Grandma's thing?
No, I mean, would we you please? Thing. I've told you to stop talking to me in college.
We gotta go. We gotta go.
Is that one of those Walter?
Is it a Walter? I don't know. That's PPK. Just go.
You'd be
007. Is that a Walter PP? I guess I shouldn't celebrate just yet because it sounds like you guys have a little.
Can't tell you something, Rich. Can't tell you something, Rich.
Should I step out?
Let me tell you something about Matt Myra.
Bravo.
Matt Myra. To be fair,
I love
has
Ralph.
No sway over anything. So
this is 100% true. This is 100% true. They try. And I say, no. Listen.
You know what? Even though he said all that shit, Matt Myra
goes home. Matt Myra goes home, plays his left-handed Dave Matthews guitar, and weeps while he's watching the DVD extras on Skyfall.
Usually, I'll grab the Les Paul. That's closest to the TV.
But anyway, I do want to talk about Wreck-It Ralph.
Thank you for the award, guys.
It came from me, not him. It came from me, not him.
I hope you're not an Academy member.
Well, but, I am, and I voted. God. Let's just say you don't have a chance in hell, Pixar.
The Matt does not speak for Nerdist.
I don't.
Are you now? Are you?
Oh, I better cancel a lot of those interviews.
What's the difference? I always used to identify as a geek.
I think it's a regional term. I grew up in Memphis and the word, actually, we did not use either word until the movie Revenge of the Nerds came out. And then a lot of us, well, the few of us, back at that time, it was a very small group that identified as what ended up being nerds. And I think it was just like, oh, okay, I guess that's what we are, because those are all the things.
Oh, that's me up there.
Those are all the things that we do. And so I think it was regional. We use nerd, and I think other people use geek. Some people say that. You know, some people say geeks are more pop culture and nerds are more technical, and some people say the reverse, and some people say nerds are less.
Some say pop, some say tonic, some say soda.
You've said enough. Uh-huh. I think some people say nerds are more socially awkward. Some people say geeks. I think we're all saying the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I think geeks weren't they like sideshow folk?
They bit the heads off chickens.
The heads off so they were showmen.
From the German word geck. And nerd, I think, was its nerd's origin came from Dr. Fun. Seuss, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, I think there was a nerd was a...
Really?
Was it from a Dr. Seuss book?
Oh. I thought it was like Happy Days. I remember like...
I think before that, used to call them nerds.
Nerd. Yeah. Cunningham, you're a nerd.
Hey.
Hey.
Maybe it's from Gary Marshall then.
Yeah.
Could be.
Look at these nerds here in my studio.
What I want you to say, Henry, is just call.
My sister Penny has a very interesting story that I'm going to tell in great detail.
About a Dr. Seuss book. Theodore Geisel is the man's full name.
These nerds are a cash cow.
I just imagine that Dick Gary Marshall is very similar to his character in Soap Dish, where he was the head of the network.
Gary Marshall is amazing, by the way.
He is amazing.
I just want to go on.
I agree with you.
I think Gary Marshall had.
He's not amazing.
Well, I mean, it's like it's almost like Gary Marshall made Skyfall. That's how good it is.
Oh my God!
I wish you would Skyfall out of this podcast.
Get it? You know, why don't you take a Skyfall out of this studio? Good.
Skyfall. Fuck you.
Skyfall on his face.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Not gonna lie. That's pretty good.
You can use that in the Wreck-It Ralph sequel.
Are we saying there's a Wreck-It Ralph sequel? Was that happening? It made enough money, right? We're gonna do it, right? Let's do it.
I think it just may happen.
I'm into it.
Can I just let me be a? I just want to say one word. I don't give a shit what it is, even if it's like. Hello, Ralph. Whatever. I don't care. It doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, I mean, you let Corolla be a voice.
You could just use it off that.
Come on. Come on. Let's talk. Seriously. Yeah, I mean, but come on.
So how much of the movie did Sarah and John play around with? Because so much of it, like, especially with Vanellope, like, you really feel Sarah in there.
And our writer was... really great at writing dialogue for Sarah, you know. But I would always let the two of them, what we would do, our process in recording would be starting with what was on the page, you know, and get a few takes of that. And usually that was just kind of, that'd be kind of our rehearsal and just kind of warming up, you know, for a scene. And then we had a very kind of democratic room, you know, where we would have the writer there, our head of story there, the actors, of course, myself. And then we would just, you know, take a moment and go, okay, how can we make this better? You know, without being precious to any one part of the process, you know. And then I would let them kind of go with it a little bit, you know, and then take it way off the reservation, take it way away from the page, you know, and let the actors... really have fun with it and just take it to where they would want to go with it. And then we'd always end where I would kind of reel them back in a little bit to try and kind of get it onto point, you know?
Yeah.
So we had a really good time. It was a really very collaborative, creative process, you know, that I wanted to play to the strengths of John and Sarah and all the whole cast of just being able to act off of one another and be spontaneous and to have that chemistry, you know, that happens between comedic actors.
Yeah.
And not squelch that, you know, by being a slave to the animation process.
Yeah. Well, I did a voice on a show called Barnyard. And so Barnyard, we were recorded as an entire cast, which is rare because a lot of times they'll have you record one at a time.
Separately.
And we recorded as an entire cast, and then we would kind of do a similar thing where we'd do a regular pass as written, and then they would call it, let's do a wacky pass.
Right.
And so you would do that, and most of it was totally unusable because inevitably it was like, and now I'm raining shit on this forest. but the function was that a lot of stuff they were able to use, but it just connected the actors.
Right.
In a way that when you're just reading lines off a page, you may not necessarily, it forced everyone to connect.
Right. And in those kind of, you know, crazy passes, you know, it can unlock something that maybe, as you know, as discovered, is not quite right, but then you can just kind of fold it right into, you know, another pass on things. So I'm a firm believer in just kind of playing with the material, you know, and not being precious to, you know, this is how it should be, every word of this is gold, and just say it how it is here. And
you ultimately want what's the funniest.
And I think that when I have someone like John and Sarah and Jack McBrayer and Jane Lynch and Alan Tudyk, you know, it's like they can bring some, and that's why I wanted those actors, you know, because there would be something in the characters that they would get, you know, that myself or the writer would not, you know, think of, you know, so that's exactly why I wanted them involved, to kind of bring that extra.
I also wanted to drop that reference just to let you know that I have done a lot of voiceover work.
Awesome.
And so I could easily say, hey, Ralph.
You're being very Matt Myra right now.
What? No, I've not insulted the guest.
What are you talking about?
No, he's being opposite.
I'm sorry,
Matt Myra.
I'm sorry if the 50th anniversary of James Bond was very important to me.
Okay, all right. I don't know if this is... Were you
Craig, we're here right now.
Oh, my God. Is that a thing?
Kyle, our PA, referenced that, I don't know if this is true or not, but that, are you a model for one of the characters on The Simpsons? Were you a model for one of the, did they use you as a reference point?
We did a model for
one of the characters.
Well, that's so nice to hear, since The Simpsons are always described as grotesque and ugly. So,
no!
Well, someone else is out there!
No, I think there was a point where we did caricatures.
Yeah, where there was a caricature.
Yeah, and I believe myself and David Silverman, one of the other directors, and Wes Archer made it. And there's like a big model pack, you know, that... Where all the turnarounds of the characters, you know, that everyone kind of, you know, dips into to kind of pull characters from, our caricatures, made it in there. And every so often, like, my kids will say, like, oh, hey, Dad, there you're on Simpsons right now.
Well, it's like, because, like, when you watch the Poochie episode and all the writers around the table, you're like, well, those guys had to have written on the show.
Right.
And that's
those are caricatures of the writers. And I think, what episode? When at Myers at the Itchy and Scratchy studio, it's David, Wes, and I are like the animators, you know, in the room.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So there's lots of caricatures that are in the background in Simpsons, even though Matt Groening hates those. You know, he would always say, like, I hated in Warner Brothers cartoons where all of a sudden the background characters, you know, they look overly designed, and you just know, like, that's a caricature of someone who I have no idea who it is. I don't care, you know. I don't care, and it just takes me right out of the cartoon. So don't put any of those into The Simpsons. And of course, we put those into.
Sure, I mean, like, at a certain point, they're just Matt Groening can't get out of his house because of the money pile in front of the door. And then you have the opportunity
to
do all the things.
Can you approve this, Matt? We're gonna push it out of the money.
Oh my God, I would love to see that episode of Hoarders where they just go in and it's just cash
everywhere. There's just dead animals trapped under piles of. But with
well, me and Brandon really hit the jackpot with this one. You got 5 seconds to check it out. My God, it looks like it's just filled with money.
Has anyone ever just found money on Storage Wars?
Yeah, like, they usually they find, you know, not a massive amount of money, but enough. But I think, you know what's
Brandon,
funny about that?
We're gonna get this one.
I feel like if they clearly saw $30 million in cash, it would still go for $1,500.
Yeah.
Like, the locker would still go for $1,500.
You know, well, I'm a collector, and those cash bags look like they're very old Brinks bags.
Now, here's what Barry would say. He'd be like, I could get he's some like, cash I'm not even interested in the cash. I think there could be something back there, like a box.
I think it
now,
should...
behind those bags...
They should just fucking mash all those... They should just make, like, ghost duck storage hunters. It's like you're looking for haunted storage bins with the souls of ducks, and that's all there.
I would watch that.
Of course you would
watch that all day.
Of course you would.
A ghost duck scared the hell out of me as a boy.
You know,
now
okay.
I believe in them.
Let's talk.
Have you had him on here?
No, I haven't had him on yet,
bro.
No. But it just occurred.
Are you the ghost that's been pushing this old woman? Come on out, bro. Come at me, bro. Come on. What, are you afraid, ghost? You scare other people, but you can't scare me, ghost?
No, you're a douchebag.
Oh, shit. It's real.
It's real.
Like you would say.
Yeah.
And then a hymn-shaped hole in the wall.
Did you just feel that cold chill? You know, they always find stuff.
Oh, you're right under a vent.
Yeah, they always find stuff that the viewer at home cannot experience.
Yeah,
right.
Like,
yeah, of course.
I just felt something go through me that just chilled me to the bone.
And do you ever notice, like, when they watch the footage, like, something will go across the... Like, they'll say something went across the screen and they put a circle around it and you're still like, I don't...
It's fucking dust.
I don't see it. Yeah.
You know, it's like... It's a dust.
No, it's an unsettled spirit.
You weren't there, bro. You didn't feel that thing go right through me.
Now,
and then we use the magic microphone.
Oh, the best
EVP.
The best is the K2 meter that they have, which is just.
You hear that? It said it's gonna come and get me.
Please get out. You're irritating the undead.
But the K2 meter, which is the thing that always has a penny shoved in it, this is their scientific thing that needs a penny to hold down the button.
Yeah.
Did you feel that, bro?
Hey, I did want to point out one cartoon that I think that a lot of people, like people around closer to our age or kind of animation nerds know about, but does not get enough credit anymore, is Duckman. Was a fucking great cartoon.
Duckman's great.
Klasky Szupo. Yeah.
That was... Yeah, that what's his name? Everett Peck, who designed it, and he's a
part
great
of
illustrator.
USA's Friday night or Saturday night lineup,
Jason,
right?
Jason Alexander
and Dweezil Zappa.
Really, really funny show, man. I love that show.
I should come back, but back to Wreck-It Ralph, which. At this point, everyone's seen Wreck-It Ralph.
I thought we're just talking about reality shows that we like about ghosts and storage bins.
Even if you've already seen Wreck-It Ralph, you can watch it again on Blu-ray. See,
awesome.
I'm trying to.
You know,
which you should.
Skyfall.
Well, I mean, Blu-ray's already out. I already pre-ordered. It's fine. If you want to go right to sleep, you just turn on that Sam Mendes commentary. You'll go right to sleep.
Really?
Yeah. But I did. I got through it. It was enjoyable.
But sometimes you need to sleep.
Yeah,
so
you know,
that's good.
Super tired.
You know, it's not bad.
How long does it take? Do you do any? How much hand drawing goes into the character design, and then when does it hop over to full CG? Like, what? How long does it take to make Wreck-It Ralph?
Well, the whole thing took about just a little under 4 years, which is actually a pretty quick schedule for a movie. I mean, sometimes a movie can take twice as long. You know, some take 8 years, you know, so.
I want to be an obtuse executive and go, 4 years, it's an hour and a half.
What's the problem?
What are you doing?
You can do 100 Simpsons in four years.
Get on your computer and dippity-doppity, you're done.
Don't they
you
have
know
a
what?
Button now?
My grandkid can do it. I'm going to bring him in. I'm going to bring my grandkid in, okay? He's
Brandon,
do it.
Come in here. Brandon.
Show him how you did that thing on the YouTube.
Fuck off, Dad. Yeah, Brandon. I should spend more time with you.
You don't appreciate what I do, Dad.
I really don't. Yeah, you're right.
What do you want? I had you when I was 60.
He's got me there.
I don't know what this is, how it works. We still had switchboard operators when I was his age.
I'm not even sure which of my wives you are from.
The present just scares me. It's got a lot of weird things in it.
The present. That's just the time period of the present right terrifies him.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, what are these things?
I wake up every morning. I go, why?
When did it all change?
Anyway, Brandon, get out.
You just show him how to
all
do
right,
this
you
quicker.
Got you 4 years, cartoon boy.
cartoon boy.
It took 4 years, and that first 9 to 12 months was writing the first draft of the script, and it was just myself and Phil Johnston working together on that. We did a table read of that script up at Pixar, and that's when they kind of decided, yes, this is a movie worth making. And we had about 18 months of storyboarding, and during that 18 months to about 2 years, we make very rough versions of the movie using storyboard panels and building these animatics, and we kind of watch it as a complete movie. And I get together with my colleagues and we talk about what's working, what isn't, how can we make it better. And we did that 7 times over the course of the film, and in theory it's supposed to be getting better and better, And at the same time that that's going on, we're designing the movie. We're designing every prop, every background, every character. And it does begin with hand drawing, with sketches and trying to discover, what kind of character is Ralph. Is he an animal? Is he a human? Is he, is he a monster? So we leave no stone unturned in really kind of trying to get the best, for these films. And then we had about a 9-month period of animating, and we go into production. We're actually making the movie. We have to light the movie at the end, because we're basically working within a 3D set, that's within the computer. And just like a real set, you have to light that. You have to put lights to make everything look the best it can be. So it's a long, tedious, arduous process that I love. Just a control freak's dream come true.
Oh, of course. You get to manipulate the entire world.
Everything.
But
that's what I loved about The Simpsons, too, was that, especially for comedy and animation, I had the ability to control a scene right down to the frame, of like, okay, it was a matter of, okay, should he get hit on the head on frame 2 or 3? Well, 2. And it really came down to that science of splitting hairs with frames. Like, what is the funniest, down to a 1/24th, like, of a second. So,
and it's always like, when you're on the recording side,
yeah,
and you bring whatever you think you can to the stuff that you're reading, and then you actually see the visuals and you're like, I had no idea that visual gag, there's so many other wonderful things
right
happen.
And what's cool is like every step of the process kind of feeds every other part, like I would show John and Sarah, those story reels that I was talking about, to give them an idea of what the movie's going to feel like. And they kind of pick up on that, like the energy of what the scene is about, and then I would show the animators reference footage of John or Sarah or Jane or Jack, recording. And they're very kind of animated, and they're, they don't just stand there and, talk, they're really getting into the part. And the animators would pick up on little nuances, from the actors. So the story crew sometimes feeds off of the design team. They see a cool design that someone did for a character and they'll say, oh, that guy's so cool, I'm going to put him into the scene, or the design team sees what the story crew is doing and saying like, oh, that's a neat location, I want to kind of play around with that, so it's so collaborative, where one piece kind of, even though it's kind of compartmentalized, into different steps in a process, they really overlap and touch and
it's
another.
I mean, as an animation director, I think it's an incredible feat because you have to have a singular vision, but I think you also have to, I assume, be flexible to allow all the different people to do their job and not, because if you focus too much on one area, then it just doesn't work as a whole piece.
Absolutely. And I'm always, the biggest part of my job is to listen, because I am working with some of the greatest artists, animators, actors, technicians in the world, and they are there because they have great opinions on, you know, their area of expertise. So if I start to pretend like I've got all the answers, you know, then I'm not going to get half of what the movie can be. So I'm always, yeah, I do remain flexible. I do kind of stick to my guns as far as the vision of what the movie should be, but always listen to kind of, well, what can we fold in here, you know, to make that the best it can be.
Well, I think, you know, Wreck-It Ralph, and when I first saw the preview, I was like, okay, please don't let this just be a movie that that is only held up by the references in it.
Right.
And then when you see it and you're like, oh my God, those just enhance this beautiful story.
Right.
And then again, it's that Chuck Jones thing. It's like, it's all about the story.
Yeah.
And then it can't be about anything else.
And that's where we when I started with the idea of, okay, you know, the life of video game characters, I thought, you know, there's a real temptation here that it's of just making the movie about game references, like you were saying, or just action, or, you know, about something that's just about plot, you know. So we kind of Phil and I put aside for a period of time the whole idea of this being about game characters, and said we have to concentrate on a very human story,
mm-hmm.
you know, for our main character. And we spent weeks and months of really kind of honing that, you know, and getting, you know, really to the core of like, well, who's our main character and what does he want? What's he doing? And then we kind of brought in the game references and kind of layered that in and then had fun with that and used it more to enhance it or just to describe the world, not so much to make it the main focus of what the movie was about.
Yeah. Well, it's I again, I love the movie. I hope there's a sequel. And maybe my girlfriend is going to cosplay as Vanellope. Like, she's already built this amazing.
There are some pretty good ones online.
Yeah.
I'll have to say.
And it happened like that.
Really fast, you know, just overnight. It's like, oh my God, you know, on Facebook, there's just like pages devoted to Vanellope.
I could do a pretty good Ralph, I think.
You think you could do a pretty good Ralph?
Yeah.
You'd have to buy that. Maybe they should sell the Ralph nose.
That'd be pretty good.
Like, so that you could strap on the
you
Ralph.
You just said
nose.
Maybe they should sell to Disney. Of course they're going to.
Well,
it's just so... Oh, my God. Michael Yeoh had it the whole time.
Oh, my God. Michael Yeoh's treasure box. Welcome to Michael Yeoh's...
Have this makeup stuff, you know.
Michael Yeoh's treasure
not
box.
Not a cinema secret, you know, anymore.
That's what he's going to end up doing.
So that's his secret.
Oh, now.
There it is.
It's in that. It's that powder bomb in that little bag.
This to the Oscars.
You could.
You know what? This is award season.
It is.
It sure is.
And every one of them, when you arrive, there's a crazy red carpet, no matter what the Annies, you know,
yeah.
have a red carpet
yeah.
now. So, and I find a lot that people will say, like, well, you clean up well.
Oh, and it's Jesus like, Christ. Well,
doesn't by definition anyone clean up pretty well?
Well, and mean, also the implication is like, normally you look like shit.
A slob, but
yeah.
Does anyone look worse when they get clean and put on a suit? It's, I don't know.
That's
a good question.
Yeah, I don't, it's a really,
or does it just mean like, oh, I see you took a shower and put
well,
on
it's
a
the,
suit.
Well, it's the Albert Brooks, the complisult.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's okay, thank you. Or it's with comedians, it's always, or if you've been on television for any length of time, then people come up and they see in something, they go, I never thought you were funny, but this latest thing, you know, like,
but you won
thanks?
Me over today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate
you know what?
That.
Today you became funny.
Yeah.
You know,
I just like to keep it real. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are kissing your ass all the time. No, they're not.
And now I got to go hunt for a ghost
in a storage unit yeah. that quacks.
The quacking
I like
ghost.
That idea.
Pawn Stars. I'm just adding something to the...
Oh, yeah. And then you have to pawn off. You have to sell. You get the duck ghost
appraised.
You're
going to sell it to Rick Harrison afterwards, yeah.
Yeah. I love it. We've come up with a lot of good things here today.
Yeah, we're going to...
You're an idea man, Richmore.
You know, I just get these ideas and they just
come
you know,
to me.
You know, if this podcasting movie business situation doesn't work out for us, I think we can go
we
into
can
TV and
TV.
Make so much money.
And we can sell those.
Our first sponsor can be the designer surgical mask.
The
oh, my
folks
God.
In Tokyo.
Oh, this is perfect. Really is perfect.
You know, did a good thing.
I mean,
here.
You've been to Tokyo. Right?
I never have. I always want to go. I know. Should we go right after the podcast?
Why have you never been to Tokyo?
I don't have a because I work too much.
The things that we talk about and hear, I mean, they have entire neighborhoods that are dedicated to everything you'd find in a 9-year-old boy's room. You know, it's just like entire, what are like subcultures here. Our ways of life
sure.
for people there, where it's just like
they have robots.
They have a robot restaurant that I just Google it, folks.
They also have a restaurant where a monkey serves you sake at a sushi place.
They have maid bars where you go they're dressed in maids. Girl dressed like an anime French maid will pour you tea and play cards with you. You know, it's
what are we? Good, why are we wasting our time in Los Angeles?
It's pretty good.
Let's go to Tokyo.
An anime maid interviewed me there.
What?
Really?
She was a journalist, and all the people, the camera people, all the tech people, just it wasn't like, oh my god, look at this girl dress. They're just like kind of, it's a girl dressed like a maid.
She's gonna talk to you, and then she's gonna go clean up that stateroom. Yeah.
What
I don't know what the problem is.
Stateroom.
Look at the American. Thinks it's weird.
Wait, are you just like, what are we doing? Like,
what the hell is? Okay, wow, a maid's here.
Yep.
All right. And here's a guy with a hand puppet in her.
And my last question for you, Rich, is do you need more towels?
And I tried to kind of make references like that, and her face was kind of, what?
She didn't
I don't get, what do you mean, housekeeping?
Well, because you're dressed as a...
Yeah. So I'm not
in on it.
So I got a little lost on them, but it's a great place.
We'll go.
We'll go
right after we go to the Disney Archives.
Yeah.
Disney Archives.
Here's what... Okay, anyone have like a calendar we can start?
Disney Archives.
Disney Archives. Yep. We'll do that Tuesday.
Sounds good to me. I'll be there. Sure, no problem.
For Tuesday.
Yep.
And then maybe that night we can go get some dinner at the Smokehouse.
I love it. Smokehouse. I love it. Great.
And then maybe
then right to Burbank Airport where we'll fly to LAX.
No. Let's go to Burbank Airport. Then we fly up to SFO. We'll visit Skywalker Ranch.
Oh, Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah, we'll take you to the Archives.
We'll go to Pixar.
We'll
grab
hit the cereal bar. We'll hit up the cereal bar.
Just grab him. Just put a bag over his head and throw him in the car.
We're going. Skywalker's place. We're going to Skywalker's.
Is there anything? Oh, that new space rib joint?
Yeah. Skywalker's place. We're going over there.
I'll have the Tauntaun steaks and...
Yeah, some of that blue milk.
Some Ewok fingers.
Tauntaun hot sauce. What was it? Didn't we have a Tauntaun pun with sauce or something like that? I forget.
We'll be eating the real Tauntaun.
And I'll have some Wampa fries and...
and...
I'll have the Mos Eisley Mexican plate.
Oh God, I can't think of anything.
I'll have the
Bespin.
I'll have the
blue,
the Vader helmet of beer.
Oh, the bottomless Vader helmet.
I'll take a bourbon. You want that neat or Hoff?
Oh. Well done.
Okay. So we'll go there. We'll go to Skywalk and then Tokyo.
Yeah.
Robot beautiful. Restaurant beautiful. In Tokyo.
Beautiful. We don't have to come back.
We've just planned our summer.
Yeah.
You must be off for a little while, right?
I'm going to take a little time off. Yeah. This week is kind of the last week for Ralph. You know, it's the Academy Awards kind of marks the end of the journey.
Yeah.
So. I feel like the Nerdist Award should have marked the end of the journey.
Well,
I mean, don't even worry about the Oscars.
I don't even know why you're talking about that because you already shit on him.
Well,
picking at that scab?
I feel like you should be very great. You beat Skyfall. Congratulations. I mean,
it does feel pretty good.
I mean, congratulations.
I can't lie.
Not going to lie about that one.
Yeah. No.
Argo? Fuck that, right?
Yeah, well, you know, he did good.
Yeah, whatever.
Our boy
didn't do as well as you.
Yeah, he did good. You know. What else, guys?
We're done.
Well, let's just talk about other movies you beat. Brave?
No.
What? I'm just saying, you beat it. Wreck-It Ralph beat it. You can't have some good-natured ribbing between the animated pictures?
I think that was just ribbing.
Yeah.
Was it?
I don't know how good natured that was.
Was it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Know. Well, I'll tell you that the girl that dresses up like Brave from in the Disney park is nice.
Pretty hot?
Yeah, she's nice.
The Merida?
She's delightful.
Well, this is going to go in a weird direction.
What's happening?
This is about to get really
creepy.
How old
is Penelope supposed to be?
Vanellope? Fucking get the character's name right,
man. Vanellope, sorry.
Jesus Christ, Rich. I'm so sorry that this happened today. You know, you come in, you give us your time, you've given us a lot of great entertainment.
This is one of those kind of like practical joke shows, yep. Right? Where it's on me, right?
Yeah. Well, it's on okay. me too,
we
Rich.
Haven't, we haven't
I'm
been
a big
recording.
Enough man to say... Congratulations, you fool. Yeah. It seemed like it was going to be a lark. And now I see what you're all about, guys.
We did it.
And
stop saying guys like I have anything to do with this.
I am so not on Matt's side.
For the record, Rich, yeah. It was me who wanted to give Wreck-It Ralph the award, and Chris said, you better say this stuff
you
about Skyfall.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, it was
Matt,
really.
Matt, you swore you would never tell him about our weird, pointless reverse heckling.
It was really weird. I didn't understand it. When he handed me the script this morning, I was like, you want me to say this? I was like, yeah I guess so.
Oh, huh?
But we had a lot of script meetings about how it was workshopped a four-year it. This was a four-year process getting up to this podcast. And you know, we storyboard it. We spent
my grants.
Brandon!
Brandon, get in here!
Podcast
fuck you, Dad.
You gotta make these podcasts run quicker.
No.
Brandon, I'm sorry my balls still work, and I'm sorry that you were born, but could you please tell us what you're looking at on your iPhone, because Daddy needs a paycheck.
What do you call that? What is that, an iPhone? iPhone?
Brandon. Brandon's running the studio now. That's it. Rich Moore.
Well,
I
thank you guys.
Adore your work, and you're a lovely gentleman, and well, thank you for coming on.
Rick Ralph's fantastic. Here's how good Rick Ralph is. As soon as it was over, I walked out of the Americana at the Grove.
Yeah.
Or not the Grove, you know, the Americana, Grove North, as I call it.
Yeah.
I walked out of the Americana Theater, went right to Target and bought a video game. That's how good Wreck-It Ralph
was. We walked out of the El Capitan, went right into the gift shop and bought a bunch of Wreck-It Ralph stuff. I bought the Wreck-It Ralph hands.
You bought the hands?
I did.
Adorable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can break things with them.
They're adorable. All right.
Well, thank you, guys.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.